From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Drug overdoses are now the number one killer of Americans under 50, more than car crashes, gun deaths, and AIDS at its peak. At the heart of the death toll, opioids. President Trump campaigned on the promise to stop the opioid epidemic, but some say the Senate health care bill will make the crisis worse. There's 1 year of money in there for treatment and large, long-term cuts to Medicaid. This hour on Point, could the Senate health care bill make the opioid crisis worse? Joining me first today from Birmingham, Alabama, is Abby Goodenough. She covers health care for the New York Times and has been closely following both the health care legislation and the opioid epidemic. She's in Birmingham to talk to people about the Senate health care bill. Abby, great to have you with us.
Hi there, Tom.
I want to go to what me. It's great to have you. I want to go to what it would mean for the battle with opioids. Could we step back for just a minute, Abby, first, and look at this Congressional Budget Office score that came out yesterday, and just look at the main points that it's making before we dive on in. 22 million Americans fewer with insurance by the year 2026. That's the headline we've all seen. Why and what else is in there, Abby, that really matters?
Well, essentially, you're talking about two things. You're talking about, a bunch of things, but phasing out the expansion of Medicaid that covered about 12 million additional adults under the Affordable Care Act, which clearly takes away insurance from a lot of people. You're talking about changing the system of funding, federal funding for Medicaid, and making it what's called a per capita cap system, so a limited amount of funding per person instead of an open-ended funding arrangement. And you're also talking about changing these subsidies and the way that the individual private insurance market works for people. And the combination of those things, the CBO is saying, means fewer people with coverage.
I mean,
a number of years.
The CBO does say that over the next 10 years, the federal deficit would be reduced by $321 billion, nothing to sneeze at.
Right. You're eliminating a bunch of taxes that were put in place to help fund the ACA. And yes, nothing to sneeze at. But at the same time, it means coverage loss for a whole lot of people, including many who have gained coverage for the first time.
15 million, if I read this right, would lose coverage by next year. Is that true? Or 15 fewer would have it by next year?
I haven't read the specifics of that really carefully, but that sounds right to me. Because a big part of this is people no longer have to pay the penalty if they go without insurance. And I think the CBO is thinking in part that a lot of people will think, whew, I don't have to pay a penalty anymore, so I don't have to have insurance if they're healthy and don't want to pay for it.
Also the case that while some, especially sicker and older, would see significant hikes in what they're spending, they're saying average premiums would decrease by 20% in 2026. So if you're patient, there's some savings here for some, on average, Abby.
Right. A lot of younger people may be paying somewhat less. You also have to consider that the insurance may well not be nearly as comprehensive as what is required under the Affordable Care Act. So higher deductibles and people not necessarily getting all of the 10 essential health benefits, for example, that the ACA requires insurers to cover now and other services. It's
that
hard to tell, but over time that could certainly happen.
That 20% average premium decrease by 2026, your paper writing, achieved largely by offering skimpier plans with higher deductibles and by pricing the old and sick out of the insurance market. Donald Trump promised better coverage, cheaper coverage, and that he wouldn't touch Medicaid. How does this plan look for those promises, Abby?
Certainly there's going to be cheaper coverage for some people, but it's a question of what's important to you. If coverage that extensively covers all of your medical needs, no matter what happens to you, is important, then maybe people want to pay a little more. But certainly with the Medicaid, not touching Medicaid, that looks like a promise that's broken, because over time, in over decades, really, these per capita caps would really constrain states in terms of what they can spend on Medicaid. And I think the CBO is saying that lost coverage and certainly lost benefits would be inevitable.
Can we turn to opioids, Maggie Goodenough with the New York Times? There's a lot of uproar about money for treatment of opioid addiction and abuse. What is that picture in the Senate Republican health care plan?
Well, the Senate plan actually only devotes $2 million in 1 year, 2018, so next year, to opioid treatment and recovery services. This is nothing close to what a couple senators from some really opioid addiction ravaged states were seeking. They wanted $45 or $46 billion, I believe, over 10 years. This is just $2 billion over 1 year. And, you know, they're saying it's not nearly enough. There's a senator from Ohio who pointed out yesterday that Ohio alone spent $1 billion fighting the opioid epidemic last year.
Republican Senators Rob Portman from Ohio, Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia saying $45 right. billion over the next 10 years. Does it mean that there couldn't be more spent? Is the $2 billion a limit, or it's just an opening bid?
I think it's very likely it's an opening bid, Tom. I think that there's a thought that this gives these senators a chance to propose more money as an amendment. And it very likely will come, but the question then becomes, what's more useful, having health coverage overall for people by keeping the Medicaid expansion and the other private insurance with the essential health benefits, including addiction treatment that exists under the ACA, or having a yearly grant allotted? And then some people say that grants are just not a substitute for health coverage.
Then
you've got to remember that a lot of people who have opioid addiction have a lot of health problems that are really expensive. Hepatitis C being a prime example, can cost $90,000 to treat hepatitis C.
Yow.
And because of needle sharing, it's a huge, huge problem among the opioid addicted.
Then over time, there's a lot of worry about the Medicaid cutbacks in effect and how that would hit opioid addiction treatment. How are those interrelated, Abby?
These cuts are much considerably further out than the end of the Medicaid expansion. So we're talking, you don't really start to feel them until, you know, 2025, 2026. And, you know, for the following decade, you feel them even more. But this opioid epidemic, it took decades to get to where it is now. It could well, experts think, take decades to really firmly get it under control. And those, you know, first of all, you're going to have a ton fewer people who are addicted to opioids or who are in that likely vulnerable population eligible for Medicaid anymore under this Senate bill. And second, those who somehow do remain eligible for Medicaid may get a lot more money, a lot less money per person for overall health care.
We heard over the weekend from Kellyanne Conway, counselor to President Trump, that it's not just about money. It's about will, she said. Here she is. Listen with me, if you would, Abby, to her exchange here with George Stephanopoulos on ABC.
You can fill up every seat in Yankee Stadium, and that accounts for the number of people who died of drug addiction in this country just last year, 33,000 of whom opioid-related. It's a gateway to heroin use, fentanyl, carfentanil. It's all a big problem. And so pouring money into the problem is not the only answer. We have to get serious about in-facility treatment and recovery.
That takes money, Kellyanne.
It takes money, and it also takes a four-letter word called will.
Abby Goodenough with the New York Times, listening there from Birmingham, Alabama. I mean, Kellyanne Conway is conceding it's a huge number of people dying here.
Right.
Is not the answer, or it's not enough. It takes will. How does that sound? Of course it does take will, but
I mean, I'm not sure exactly what she's talking about there. Is she talking about will among the addicted population?
Sounds like it, like willpower to get off the drugs.
If that's the case, I think that addiction experts would say this is a chronic relapsing disease. It's similar to not in the relapsing sense, but similar to diabetes, similar to any other chronic disease. And it's not a matter of will. It's a matter of your brain chemistry being changed by addiction. And you need, over many years, not just treatment, but support over many years to continue to stay clean. It's not by any means just a matter of will.
I guess it's fair. She's saying money and will. Of course, you can start to play with that ratio and downplay the need for money in a hurry. Abby, your newspaper and others have reported on big abuses in drug treatment centers, particularly of Medicaid money. Should that give Americans pause about the dollars that are going toward this effort?
I think that most of the abuses that are being talked about there may be among the private individual market. You know, a lot of people, young adults who are among that vulnerable population for opioid addiction, are now able to stay on their parents' private insurance plans.
Yep.
Under the Affordable Care Act until they turn 26. And a lot of those are using that coverage to get opioid addiction treatment. In terms of the abuses in inpatient treatment, I do think that there is a lot that needs to be carefully combed over and looked at in terms of the practices. And we do need to do a lot more examination of outcomes of addiction treatment and really figure out what, I mean, we know what works. We know medication-assisted treatment research has found is a huge piece of addressing opioid addiction. But in terms of the sober living homes and, you know, these brokers who find addicted people to go to the sober living homes, et cetera, I think there's a lot of scrutiny that can be brought to bear there in Florida. For one, has started doing that.
We're going to talk with Senator Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire. Her state has really wrestled with this. In a word, Abby, in Birmingham, Alabama, what are you finding on reaction to the Senate health care plan? Positive, negative, all?
I am talking to people mostly about the plan for Medicaid. And of course, there's a lot of concern. And this is a state that already spends very little on Medicaid relative to many others. And so, yes, concern, deep concern.
Abby Goodenough covers health care for the New York Times and has been good enough to join us from Birmingham today. Abby, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
We're talking about Trump care, McConnell care, and the opioid crisis. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about, what do you want to call it, Trump care, McConnell care, and the opioid crisis, what the Senate health care plan would mean for treatment, survival, and how we are actually tackling, or not, the scourge of opioid addiction. You can join us this hour. Are we stepping up to deal with this and with what it takes to treat the addicted? Did Obama do enough? Will Trump do enough? He promised a lot on the campaign trail. And if the Senate's Medicaid cuts go through, what would that mean for opioid treatment in your state, your community? The president talked a lot about opioids on the campaign trail. And he talked about it on March 29th this year when he established a commission to address the opioid epidemic. Here he was in a listening session that day saying it hasn't had enough attention.
It's really one of the biggest problems our country has, and nobody really wants to talk about it. Vice President Pence mentioned this coming into the room. He said this is a problem like nobody understands. And I think they're going to start to understand. And more importantly, we have to solve the problem.
Okay, but here's the Republican bill out of the Senate and Republicans saying, whoa, there's not enough in there. Here's Republican Governor John Kasich of Ohio. This is on CNN State of the Union on Sunday. Asked if his bill would, if the bill would benefit Ohioans. Here's how he responded.
The total number of dollars that are going to be dedicated to Medicaid are not enough. I mean, it's not enough resources there. And I've been very concerned here in my state about treating the mentally ill, the drug addicted, the chronically ill, particularly under Medicaid expansion. If you look at the entire Medicaid pie, there is a huge challenges to it because the resources are just not there.
The resources just not there, says John Kasich. Senator Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire joins us in just a moment. Let me get one call here from Burlington, Wisconsin. Tom, you're on. What do you see?
Well, I've buried three people since April the 5th in Paul Ryan's district. I live in his district. A 30-year-old, a 52-year-old widow, and a 28-year-old young man.
And dying of what, Tom?
Of overdosing opioids.
Wow.
And it's devastating. It's absolutely devastating. And the thing is, my question is, how can we trust the doctors to solve the problem when they are, there's money in it when they subscribe these opioids to the patient. The patient comes in there and they see him for 5 minutes.
Yep.
They charge him a doctor's fee to
yep.
see him, and then they give him all these drugs. I'd like to suggest that you go to the police department or you get your drug once a day, or go to Walmart Pharmacy or all the pharmacies and get your drug that day instead of giving out all these drugs. And that's my suggestion.
So the profit motive itself, you're worried about it, and how the medical community comes into that. I appreciate your call, Tom, from Wisconsin. I want to get Senator Maggie Hassan in right now. She joins us from Washington today. Democratic senator from New Hampshire. New Hampshire is one of the states with the highest rates of death due to drug overdose. She's former governor there, of course, until this year. And the opioid crisis has certainly hit her home state hard. Senator Hassan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks. Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well. What do you see in the Senate health care plan Republicans have put forward when it comes to tackling the opioid problem?
Well, I have lots of concerns about Trump care, but with specifics about the opioid crisis, which is devastating my state, communities across the country, and sadly, what your caller just recounted, knowing loved ones who have died of opioid addiction is far too common a story in my state and across the country. The two aspects of Trump care that are the most concerning when it comes to the opioid crisis is the repeal of Medicaid expansion. Experts in my state have said that Medicaid expansion, which in our state was a bipartisan effort, is the most important tool to addressing the epidemic. And then the other thing about Trump care is that it undermines the requirement that insurance companies provide certain important care like coverage for substance use disorder. It undermines those essential health benefits that are in the Affordable Care Act. And that, too, has been a really important tool because it's required insurance companies to provide treatment for substance use disorder, are really critical, not only for people who need the treatment, but for standing up the kind of treatment capacity we know we need to beat this epidemic.
Senator, what do you hear on Capitol Hill from your Republican colleagues? Are they, because many of them, you know, Chris Christie, President Trump himself on the campaign trail, talked a lot about the opioid crisis. Are Republicans saying, we don't believe it takes money, we just want to get the deficit down, or it's really more about willpower than money, or because they themselves have focused a spotlight on what a problem this is?
Look, there is bipartisan concern expressed about the issue, and you're hearing in your run-up to this piece, you talked about the fact that there are some senators from states which have been particularly hard hit who have expressed concern about the repeal of expansion and the lack of funds in Trump care to tackle the opioid crisis. But let's be really clear. This Trump care bill in the Senate, as it was in the House, appears to be as much about tax cuts as anything else. And so what we're seeing is a bill that is supposed to be about health care, which is really about tax cuts while taking away health care from millions and millions of Americans and undermining our effort to combat the biggest public health and public safety challenge we have in my state, to be sure, and others would say the same thing in other states around the country. What we should be doing is coming together, building on the Affordable Care Act, improving it where necessary in a bipartisan way, but right now what we're seeing from Senate Republican leadership is a bill that would rip health insurance away from millions, take away Medicaid expansion, and, by the way, make deep cuts to traditional Medicaid, which is also critical to people getting the kind of health care that they're going to need to get, whether it's behavioral health, whether it's for an injury, so that they don't necessarily need to get treated with opioids and become addicted as a result. You know, your caller earlier today talked about the role of prescribing here. Most people who end up with substance use disorder involving opioids started with a legitimate prescription. And one of the things we have to do is make it possible for people to get the kind of care they need so they are not overly reliant on opioids.
Senator Hassan, we just got you for another minute. I wish you'd get very real with us for a second. I mean, you know New Hampshire. You were governor there. You know the people there. New Hampshire's a beautiful state. And yet you've got one of the highest death rates in the country. I mean, something like 400 plus last year. New Hampshire's not that big a state.
Right.
Now, okay, it may start with a pain problem, but why are people in your state tumbling down this path into addiction and death? What is going on here?
It is a combination of high prescribing rates of opioids. Yeah. People have to understand this is an illness, just like any other chronic illness. and the evolving drug supply, because we're going from heroin now to fentanyl, which is stronger, more addictive, and cheaper for the drug dealers to make. So it's an evolving crisis in a number of ways. We have to address it from both the supply and the demand side.
But why are people so open to taking these drugs, Senator Hassan? Are they bummed out?
80% of people who become addicted start with a lawful prescription from their doctor. And doctors were encouraged by pharmaceutical companies to prescribe, being told that these were not addictive. And so we have a generation of doctors who were trained to treat pain as a vital sign, telling their patients that these were not addictive drugs. And one of the things I'm doing in the Senate is working with the FDA to make sure doctors understand the lethal and addictive nature of these drugs. And we also have to get pharma to acknowledge this. And we need, you know, most opioids in the world are prescribed here in the United States.
Yeah,
and
by
that's one of the roots of this problem. It took us a long time to get here, and there are lots of combined factors that cause this. But here's the other thing. What we know is that when people do get treatment, they can get well, they can stay in recovery. We did an emergency field hearing on Trump Care in New Hampshire on Friday, Senator Sheehan and myself, and we met people in recovery who are getting better, but they need to have the resources to get the treatment they need, because this is a chronic condition, and we will always need to have the resources to get people treated.
Last question. You're there in Washington. Are the Senate Republicans going to pull this off and pass this bill or not?
People have to keep fighting as hard as they can to defeat this bill. And people around the country have been speaking up. They've been calling their legislators. They need to keep at it, both at the state level and at the federal level. We need to stop this bill, and we shouldn't rest until we do.
Senator Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, Democrat, joining us there from Washington. Senator Hassan, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Tom.
Let's take a call right here from Baltimore. Ganel is on the air. Ganel, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hello, I'm a community college instructor in Baltimore, so I'm always driving up and down these streets. There's two sets of people. There's the people who got a legal prescription, and then there's the people who didn't. And they're all addicted to opioids or something similar that's making them exist as a living suicide. There's a issue here, a greatest common factor, and people are hopeless, people have low morale, and people are not getting the preventative care that they need. My concern is, once they strip this thing down, will people have access to mental health? And I don't think they will. And will people who are poor have quality access to quality drug rehabilitation?
Ganel, you're right there on the streets. Kellyanne Conway says, don't forget about willpower here. What about that?
Willpower. Okay, let me tell you something. Unless you are already in a poor mental state, I had a C-section. They gave me Vicodin, okay? They were all concerned about it. I just had a baby a few years ago. I didn't really understand why, because I'm not in that drug world.
Yeah.
But after my pain was gone, I didn't have a desire to have Vicodin in my system.
Mm-hmm.
People want to be in a daze. They don't have any willpower when they're already weak, when they're already hurting. This healthcare issue is not disconnected from the economy. It's not disconnected from the lack of retraining programs. That's why it's such a big deal in rural areas. People are bored. They have nothing to do, and they have no money to spend. There's like people who are in poverty who aren't really considered. And the healthcare issue is an issue because they get to just zone out every single day and not think about their problems. That's why they're on drugs.
Ganel, I am really glad you're listening, and I'm glad you're calling. You've got the ring of truth right there, and I appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. Thank you very much for calling, Ganel. And Ganel is off into the streets of Baltimore. I want to go to New Orleans right now, and Dr. Andrew Kolodny, he's co-director of the opioid policy research effort at the Heller School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University in New Orleans, as he joins us today to speak about the opioid crisis at a big conference there for people in the field of health services research. Andrew Kolodny, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
What do you see unfolding or in front of us in this Senate healthcare bill that Republicans have put together when it comes to tackling the opioid crisis?
Well, I think the bill would make the opioid addiction epidemic worse if many people who are now receiving treatment for opioid addiction lose access because they lose their Medicaid coverage, there's a high likelihood that they'll relapse. And if they relapse, there's a high likelihood that they'll die of an overdose. So this is not going to help. And the $2 billion that's been mentioned, you know, it's totally unclear how that money would be spent. The language is very vague. The language mentions mental health and substance use. It doesn't even specifically say opioids. So that doesn't really give much comfort.
Can you help us understand here? From my reading, it looks like it was only last year that the Obama administration put money toward this, and then $1 billion. So Republicans might say, well, it was just, you know, we're doubling what Obama did last year. What's the problem?
Well, that is absolutely true. President Obama neglected the opioid addiction epidemic. I think in many ways, his handling of the opioid addiction epidemic was similar to Ronald Reagan's handling of the AIDS epidemic. Ronald Reagan didn't speak about AIDS until his last year in office. He wouldn't say the word publicly.
Yep, yep.
And many people believe if he had acted more forcefully early on, the AIDS epidemic wouldn't have gotten as bad as it did. President Obama didn't speak publicly about the opioid addiction epidemic until his last year in office. In 2016 was the first time he proposed any new funding for the opioid addiction epidemic, which was $13 million, which was so low it was insulting. And then in 2017, it was as if he woke up overnight to recognize we have a serious problem, started to do some of the right things, and on his way out the door, signed a bill that gave us $500 million a year over 2 years. And that was really the first new money to address the opioid addiction epidemic, even though the problem began 20 years ago.
So why can't Republicans say, look, you know, lay off us. Your Democratic president was asleep at the switch, and then when he woke up, he put half toward it or a quarter toward it per year. What we're doing?
Well, I think it would be very easy for President Trump to do better than President Obama did on the opioid crisis, but he's off to a terrible start. What we've seen from the Trump administration has been quite a bit of talk. He's formed a commission. He campaigned on it. He's talked about things that he'd like to do, but we have yet to see any real action. And some of the actions that we've seen are concerning. For example, his appointment to Commissioner of FDA is an individual, Scott Gottlieb, who's worked very closely with the pharmaceutical industry, including opioid manufacturers and distributors.
So let me get a quick call right here. Steve in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on with Dr. Andrew Kolodny. What do you see, Steve?
Well, I think there is a danger in over-medicalizing this. As a previous caller, Gunnell for Baltimore, pointed out, the causes are multiple, and it's not simply a chronic disease like diabetes 2 or asthma. I mean, it's very different. And I think we've had about 60 years of experts devising addiction recovery plans. This isn't just start overnight. And, you know, the most successful seems to have been Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, and they cost zero.
So these Republican senators from Ohio, West Virginia, they say we need $45 billion. Others say we need $190 billion over the next 10 years.
Right.
What do you say, Steve?
I say it's not simply a matter of throwing billions. That's a, you know, simplistic answer to this problem, and you will have all kinds of advocacy groups and medical professionals demanding more and more money, and I don't think that's the only issue we've got going.
Let me grab it right there. Dr. Kolodny, what do you say in response?
Support groups, 12-step, something like AA, does not work very well for most people who are opioid addicted. Abstinence-based approaches, rehabs, detoxes also don't work well for most people who are opioid addicted. The way opioid addiction is treated most effectively is with medical treatment, with a medicine like buprenorphine prescribed long-term or methadone maintenance for people with more severe addiction. So we actually do need to spend some money on this problem.
We're going to come back and go to the heart of the opioid epidemic in the United States, the county with maybe the worst problem in the country, which may, I guess, given where we stand, means the worst problem in the world around this. Dr. Andrew Kolodny of the Heller School for Social Policy and Management of Brandeis. What's it going to take, realistically, to pull people back from opioid abuse and addiction? This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Trump care, McConnell care, whatever you want to call it, and the opioid crisis, what the Senate Republican health care plan would mean for treatment, survival, and how all of us, the country, how we're tackling this scourge. Lots of response online. Everybody's feeling this. DJ writes to us on Twitter, "It took a young man right in my neighborhood." Well, yours and many, many others. Ginny writes, "I've been on Suboxone." This is one of these drugs that helps people get off. "Saved my life." And the ACA, the Affordable Care Act. "Addiction is a disease," Ginny writes. "This bill will kill so many." Kill bill? What? Kelly writes to us, "Cutting money for treatment but increasing money for jails. Something is wrong with that math." Finance Phil writes to us, "Kellyanne Conway, I guess, is taking the Nancy Reagan approach to drugs, AIDS, incest, rape. Just say no." But right now, that's the way it sort of looks. We're going to talk in a moment with the with a voice right in the middle of this from the county in the country with the highest death rate, Montgomery County, Ohio. A woman living on Morgan Avenue in Dayton, Ohio. That's right in the middle of this, telling MSNBC that this is correspondent Jacob Soboroff, that her street was nicknamed Morgue Avenue in Montgomery County because the number of drug-related deaths have occurred there.
Which houses have people died in?
What houses have they not died in? Really?
Really?
Really. Look at all these places, man. I've lived here for about, 5 years? And the last 5 years, it's unreal. I mean, in 47 minutes, there was already 9 deaths.
In 47 minutes?
On this street.
People are dying from what?
Drugs.
We're going to go there, right there, in just a couple of minutes. Now, you got Chris Christie at the head of President Trump's Opioid Addiction Commission. And as governor, he took the Medicaid expansion under Obamacare. Chris Christie did. He was talking in March with CNN's Jake Tapper, and he said the expansion program that many Republican-led states denied or refused made a big difference helping treat people. This is Trump's head of his commission now, Chris Christie. Something he would share with the Trump administration, he said, so they could take a more informed decision about a new health care bill. Here was Christie.
I will certainly share with the president and the administration the experiences we've had here in New Jersey on the Medicaid program. You know, for instance, 5 times the number of people are now getting drug abuse treatment in New Jersey through the Medicaid program that got it 3 years ago. I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing for America's future.
Okay. And Medicaid right at the heart of it. Kellyanne Conway again talking with George Stephanopoulos saying, no cuts to Medicaid here, George.
These are not cuts to Medicaid, George. This slows the rate for the future, and it allows governors more flexibility with Medicaid dollars because they're closest to the people in need.
Okay, nobody's really buying that. It does change the formula, and over time, Medicaid spending would come way down. Dr. Ed Nicolodny of Brandeis is with us. Are the Republican senators right from West Virginia and Ohio? We need $45 billion over the next 10 years. I've seen another estimate. We need $190 billion. What's sufficient, and how do we know it's being well spent, Dr. Kolodny?
We do need to spend tens of billions of dollars building out a treatment system that does not really exist yet. So, obviously, if people who are receiving effective treatment paid for by Medicaid lose access to their Medicaid, that will make things worse for those individuals. They could relapse, they could overdose. But the reality is we haven't really done a very good job of ensuring access to effective treatment paid for by Medicaid. Many of the people who are receiving treatment with buprenorphine, also called Suboxone, they are having to pay out of pocket for that doctor's visit. The Medicaid is just paying for the prescription. So many of the state licensed drug and alcohol treatment programs are not yet offering the treatments that are needed. The $500 million a year over the next 2 years that President Obama signed into law on his way out the door, most of that money is going to states to incentivize building out some of these treatment systems. And the providers that are getting that money are mostly providers that do take Medicaid. So if we reduce access to Medicaid, exactly where we're investing right now in expanding access to medication assisted treatment, we may wind up wasting the money that's being spent right now. So to create a system that doesn't exist will take billions. If we want to see overdose deaths start to come down, what we have to do is create an environment where treatment, effective treatment, is easier to access than pills, heroin, or fentanyl. If you think about how New York City did a really nice job of reducing smoking, what we did in New York City was to hike the tax on cigarettes.
Yeah.
And it was made illegal to smoke indoors and just about everywhere. And at the same time, the city started to give out nicotine patches and nicotine replacement therapy for free to everyone that called 311. So we need to get there with opioid addiction treatment. If we don't, overdose deaths will keep going up.
Boy, that makes it sound like a very expensive thing to treat. But of course, it's expensive. Once you're in there, it's expensive no matter what. People dying, people needing all kinds of other medical attention as a result of addiction and abuse. Scott, right in your backyard there, Dr. Claudine. Scott, in New Orleans, in Louisiana. Scott, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, how are you doing today? So my comment is, Tom, that I have been clean from opiates for over 2.5 years, and recently I relapsed. My fear is in this city, pre-Obamacare, the buprenorphine orphan treatment was non-existent. We have a huge lack of psychiatric and addiction treatment services. Under Obamacare, I was afforded a couple of doctors, a very limited choice of doctors. I tried for years to get effective treatment with these doctors. Otherwise, yes, I was paying out of pocket $300 and $600 for a prescription monthly, which I'm lucky enough to be able to afford.
For Suboxone,
my parents,
yeah.
Many of my friends, correct.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen how dangerous it can be, Scott?
Absolutely. Over the weekend, I, sort of was on the streets of New Orleans in the French Quarter. I actually witnessed a good friend overdose and die this weekend on fentanyl.
Oh, God.
Which seems to be the norm here. No longer are you getting heroin, you're finding mostly, predominantly fentanyl, which is extremely powerful and extremely dangerous.
Listen, can I ask you very personally? I mean, I'm proud and glad that you stayed off of it for 2.5 years. That's terrific. But you said you've relapsed just recently.
Correct.
Can you explain to us why? I mean, I know it's personal and all that, but can you why? Why did you? Was it just like a drunken night where you just went there as well, or why'd you go back? You know how hard it is to get off.
You know, Tom, that's something I should probably ask myself a little bit more in detail. Thank you for that. It definitely wasn't a drunken night experience. It was, it became more accessible to me through new friends. It became more present and more present. The opportunity to do it came when I switched doctors. I switched Suboxone doctors, and I went in to get new. I went to see this doctor, and he asked of me that I needed to be dirty for heroin again before he could prescribe me, and so or any opiate. So I kind of, chose that excuse. I wanted to do it again.
Listen, I wish you all the best. You know, get clean and enjoy that, because that's pretty darn good too. But I appreciate your candor and your self awareness, Scott, and I appreciate your call from New Orleans.
Thanks, Tom.
Andrew Kolodny there, also in New Orleans. I want to go to Dayton, Ohio, right now, if we may, and Jody Long. She's Division Director for Treatment and Recovery Services at the Montgomery County Department of Alcohol, Drug Addiction, and Mental Health Services. Montgomery County, Ohio, has the highest number of overdose deaths per capita in the United States. That may well mean the world. Jody Long, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
So you're watching the debate in Washington. You're seeing what the Senate Republicans have put forward. How are you thinking about it when you look at the challenge you're facing in Montgomery County?
Mm-hmm. What we know is that Medicaid provides and covers treatment for almost 50% of the people here in Montgomery County. And if there are changes in Medicaid eligibility, we're looking at 4,000 people just today that would have to either look for other ways to pay for treatment services, such as your caller just stated, privately, or make the decision not to seek treatment, which in the end is going to create a larger crisis for us in terms of the number of overdose deaths.
Does treatment work? If we spend the billions, does your experience tell you that we'll get a clean society?
over time, treatment does work. People do recover. And we know that about 50% of the people that are faced with addictions over the lifetime of living with their addiction do find recovery. Yes, there are periods of relapse, but the access to treatment makes those periods of relapse smaller and smaller, and that encourages that ongoing long-term recovery. And it is still more cost-effective to pay for treatment than it is to pay for prisons, to pay for jails, to pay for hospital, other medical costs related to untreated addiction.
What about Kellyanne Conway saying, yeah, money, okay, but you need will? And she seems to mean willpower there. We've got one listener, John, who's writing to us and says, Kellyanne has a point when she says this issue won't be solved simply by throwing money at it. John writes then also about our caller, Gunnell from Baltimore, says the caller excuses the drug users and says it's not their fault because they're bored. This type of thinking allows the problem to grow. What about willpower and what about fundamental reasons that this is happening in the first place, Jody?
Addiction is a brain disease. It literally happens inside the brain, as when they're exposed to a substance, it changes the chemical makeup of a person's brain. And it's not about willpower at that point. It affects the midbrain, it affects our reward sensors, and then our brain trips up the person in recovery to believe that they need to continue using to seek pleasure in that way. And at that point, when you think about it like a brain disease, like you think about diabetes, would we ever say to somebody who has untreated diabetes, we're just going to take away your health care because you keep doing this to yourself? We don't say those things. We say, no, we want to ensure that we provide prevention and intervention for you. And we need to look at addiction the same way. It is a brain disease with a diseased brain. And yes, it can be treated. And yes, people do get seek recovery. But it is a chronic health physical health care issue, and we need to treat it as such.
Wow, like we needed one more of those, and here we've got a big one. Clara, in your backyard, Jody, Clara in Dayton, Ohio. Clara, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. What do you see?
Well, what I see is that, you know, we definitely have a big problem with opioids here in Dayton, and one of the things that needs to be addressed is the pipeline that's being created by the doctors who are handing out prescriptions. And my feeling is that, unfortunately, these opioids need to go under state control through state pharmacies so that we can monitor what doctors are handing these out and also develop a pipeline of people who are potentially going to become addicted and start nipping this in the bud. I mean, there's a lot that needs to be done on the issue of the people who are already addicted and the street influence, the informal economy of the drugs, but we need to stem the tide as well, and I don't think that there's enough attention being paid to stemming the tide.
Clara, I appreciate your call from Dayton. Andrew Kolodny, what about it? Do we need to go to the source here, sort of need to stop the pipeline? Is that as important? Are you up against the pharmaceutical industry and part of the medical community when you try to stop this flood?
Yes, we are, and yes, we do need much more cautious prescribing. So our opioid crisis is not an abuse epidemic. It's not people out there taking dangerous drugs because it feels good and they're accidentally killing themselves. Our opioid crisis is an addiction epidemic. Once people are addicted, they have to keep using to avoid feeling awful. And the reason we're struggling with all of these health and social problems related to opioids is because of the very sharp increase in the number of Americans suffering from opioid addiction, a 900% increase since 1997. And the reason that opioid addiction has become so common is because we overexposed the population to prescription opioids, because doctors have been writing too many opioid prescriptions. And the reason we started to prescribe opioids so much more aggressively starting in the late 90s is we were responding to a brilliant marketing campaign. Doctors started to hear from every different direction, not just directly from the pharmaceutical companies, but we began hearing from our professional societies, from our hospitals, from the Joint Commission, even from state medical boards, which are the state agencies that are supposed to protect the public from reckless prescribing. From all of these different directions, we started to hear that we had been under-prescribing opioids because of an overblown fear of addiction, and that the compassionate way to treat just about any complaint of pain was with an opioid. And as we responded and the prescribing went up, it led to this crisis.
Oh, Jody Long, here's a listener who writes, Oxy is legalized heroin, branded, packaged and pushed by pharmaceutical companies and their distributors via pain clinics that amount to modern-day strip mall opium dens. What do you actually need that would be helpful? You're right there at the very heart of it. What do you need from Washington?
So in Ohio, we did take steps to manage the number of prescribing opiates by our prescribers, by our doctors in Ohio. And that's actually what drove some of the increases that we saw of illegal heroin use and illicit fentanyl use in the communities, because as we shut down the pill mills and as we set best practices for prescribers around opiate prescriptions, and now we have acute prescribing guidelines for our emergency rooms, and we do have an electronic reporting system across Ohio, so we know what doctors are prescribing opiates, and that is tracked by the pharmacy board. We have taken those steps, but as the doctor stated, the pieces that started in the 80s and the 90s around treating pain and prescribing practices, we're still feeling the effects of that 30 years later, and it's going to take a while for us to come out of that. And to really focus in on prevention efforts. So we educate the community about not needing a prescription opiate for every dental procedure, not needing a prescription opiate, you know, when you sprain your ankle. Those are the prevention messages that we have to send along while we're trying to also treat the individuals facing the addictions. And so it has to be along the continuum. We have to have prevention messaging to our young people and to our parents and to the seniors in our community about not needing opiate prescription meds for every incident or injury, but then we also need treatment.
Resources, once they're there, something for everybody, and certainly the Senate right now to be thinking about. Jody Long knows of what she speaks. Her county has the highest number of overdose deaths per capita in the United States, Montgomery County, Dayton, Ohio. Jody Long, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Dr. Andrew Kolodny in New Orleans today, co-director of the opioid policy research effort at the Heller School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis University. Andrew Kolodny, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
We're taking it all on board right here. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.